Our next speaker is Richard Pasemonic, and his title is, let's see here, Propellant Fracturing of Vertical and Horizontal Wells. Richard's a retired Colorado School of Mines professor.
Correct.
Correct?
So, okay, thanks. This is a little different idea than what you've done, but this is kind of where I've been. I've been here as a School of Mines for 22 years, and somebody at one time, since I came out of NASA, I worked for Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and they said, why don't you figure out a better way to fracture oil and gas wells using solid rocket fuel? And he was just joking, and I thought, you know, that might not be a bad idea. So that's how it all came about. I'm going to go through, it's a pretty long presentation, but I'm going to go through it fairly fast. People that had tried propellant fracturing before had put the detonator down the center, which doesn't work because you blow the propellant apart, and an unknown amount of area is burning, and so you get very bad results. Okay, the overview that we want to do here is we want to produce gas at a specific rate, high energy, and a total volume has to be enough to produce fractures, and we want to have it be environmentally safe. The stainless missile fuel is a very environmentally safe propellant. We've used some other propellants besides that. The idea of propellant fracturing is that if I represent the well bore, and this is the mass, the maximum stress fracture out this way and back, that's the way the fractures normally go because you're overcoming the minimum, which is perpendicular to it. If you're able to get the pressure fast enough to a higher pressure, you can get a temporary stress reversal and fracture perpendicular to it. So rather than fracturing a zone that has X number of cubic feet, you actually can triple it and even go higher than that. So that's where the whole idea came about. This is the Aerojet where we got our propellant from. If I go to the next slide here, this is the Stinger missile, and that's the propellant that we used to begin with. And what I've passed around is an inert sample of the Stinger missile fuel. You'll notice that there's a section missing there, and every time I've done a presentation, somebody borrowed some of it. So it's kind of gone away. But you'll notice that there's a rod that goes down the outside of each side. One is the igniter, and the other one is the thing to hold it together, because when that burns, obviously it's going to separate. So we have a number of configurations that we use. This is a kind of interesting thing. I've got five different materials here. The yellow is the octane, that's the energy calories per cc. The next is the stim gun propellant, which is another competitor which has gone out of business. And the next one is ours, which is the, Arkite propellant. And then the last one there is Arkadine, which is another propellant we're using. And then finally, Tolvite, which is a TNT substitute. So you can see that it has a lot of calories per cc, which is what we're trying to do. And that's what allows us to overpressure the well and a fracture in the direction perpendicular to the normal fractures. So rather than just getting a fracture that goes out and comes, you know, both ways, it's draining a fairly small amount of propellant or petroleum-based material than if you can fracture the other direction. Now, the modeling I did was to have the fracture, the main propellant fracturing, go out this way, and then the minor ones go perpendicular. But it doesn't just go perpendicular to the axis that we're down the wellbore. It actually goes perpendicular as you move further out. So rather than draining this real long, skinny ellipse of oil-producing formation, we're doing a much wider value, and our average production increase has been over threefold. This is the relative value of common oil field industrial propellants that they have been using, which is the blue, and ours is the Arkadine. And the one we have used since then, which is Arkite, is about twice as energetic as that. Okay, here's some of the characteristics of the propellant and how it burns. We took and made, these are actually measured data, and the red line is for the place where you get before an explosive burn. It's called the ballistic burn, and then you get the Moyers data. So out here in the where the black line goes up is really what happens. You get an E, and it's very important for propellant to have this component right here, this exponential under pressure, as low as possible. You get closer to one, it gets more, has more tendency toward an explosive, and if you get a have it at one, it is an explosive. So we're trying to keep it down in a controllable range. This is a little bit of, this is a, the stim gun is a, was a competitor. They have a burn rate which is much faster than ours, but doesn't produce as much gas. So it's not one that's really well. This is the one here at the bottom where we show the need is Arkite. And the one that we have since then, and I don't have much data on it here, is Arkadine. And here's an overview of the concepts. We're trying to get the best pressure pulse possible, and then we're going to have a comparison of graphs. This actually is the wrong presentation. I have another one that's a little better than this. Let me just go past here. We're looking here at time versus pressure, and we get the useful work in this area here. Everything below this bottom line here is not useful. It's getting up to where the fracture extension pressure is. This is a the fracture gradients. This is looking at elapsed time here and the pressure. And you can see that we get fairly high pressures downhole. And normally when you have pressures this high, you destroy the casing and you destroy the formation that you're trying to produce oil and gas from. If you do it quick enough, you don't. For instance, when you fracture with a high energy explosive, the propellant stretches to its elastic limit and then fractures. So you're in the well. And if you're clever enough, you can get the pressure up and above the maximum pressure that the wellbore can take, the actual well casing, and do some real significant fracturing, and then back down past that critical pressure before the casing has a chance to stress past its elastic limit. So you get a lot better performance from the well. Here's some of the data that we did, downhole pressure gauge. This is the North Sea well. This well here was the last well we actually shot. They had tried two shots. It's actually the first well that has worked in the North Sea for Norway. They tried two conventional fracturing treatments, and it was coming back with no production. And they spent $2 million on those two runs. We shot it for $80,000, and it went from zero to 2,200 barrels of oil a day. So it was a pretty significant, they were pretty happy with that. It made them some money. But they lost a lot by spending money in the conventional fracturing process. The optimum treatments here is we have higher burn rates, we have increased generation of gas, we get a very quick pressure rise, which is important because you want to start fracturing the formation in the normal direction, which is not consistent with a conventional fracture, so that you can actually get more communication with the reservoir. And it's predictable, and there's no explosion. Here's some of the things we've looked at. This is the different propellants. The Arkadine, which is the 439, which is this one here, is a very nice propellant because as far as we know, there's no explosive, or there's no knee where it goes to an explosive fracturing. And then we used the 497. The one we used primarily was the Arkadine, which is the 439, which is up in here. I'm sorry, the 386M, which was down here, that was the first one we used. We were very conservative, and then we kept moving up and getting a better fraction. Here's theoretical gas volumes. The gas volume is important because if you don't get enough of gas volume, you're not going to fracture. So there's burn rate that's important, and also there's volume gas rate is also important. And this is the first one we did, which is very conservative. And then we moved up here to the arcadine, which is pretty decent, but it didn't produce enough gas. And then we finally went up here to the arcadine 439. Here's some of the testing we did. We did it actually up at Rocky Flats. This is a tube here that we have propellant in, and we light it at one end, and we measure the burn rate that way. Here's the pressure as a function of time, and this is in seconds. So we light here at 0.02 seconds, and we're all done here by 0.08. So we're looking at 600th of a second, and that's a nice time, because if you get much more than that, you're risking fracturing and exploding the well casing. Here's some other look at here, detonating cord ignition test. This is the one of the configurations we have, multiple applications. The green here represents the propellant. The blue here represents the carrier. And we have fired wells two different ways. One is we go down hole and we perforate the well, and then we drop down the propellant and fire. The other way is we go down and we light the shape charges that put the holes in the well, and then the propellant lights subsequent to that. So it's all done very rapidly. Perforating gun enhancement. There's different ways of making the thing better. You know, we can look at the knee of the propellant, the slope of the propellant, engineering the propellant to have it have a better burn rate for what we want, and we have a patented solution which allows us to protect it. The propellant, let me skip this slide here. I'm trying to get past some things. Here's a test here we did. There's propellant here, and this is out there at Rocky Flats. And I think we show some, I don't show those here. Here's a solution for the control pressure by knowing the propellant characteristics and applying them to different designs. And the area that you... the aperture area is the cross-section area times R times PX, and C star is the characteristic burn rate of the propellant. I'm getting kind of lost here. This is not the slide I thought, the thumb drive I thought I had. I have another one that's a little more explicit. Let me move here. Here's some tests that we did. Of the Arkite 386M. These are different apertures in the propellant carrier, and you can see that we get different pressures depending on what we do, and these are down, and these are like 200 milliseconds. Here's again the break of the slope again for the, this is the what they call the ballistic range, and then here's the artillery model that goes on afterwards. Propellant with a slope break in excess of the maximum safe pressure basically prevents us from having decent burns. The arcadine has a high pressure slope, and it makes it ideal for candidates which are used in closed vessels such as propellant gun where higher maximum pressures are required. Here's some burn rates again for the different propellants we use. The 386 is the one we use most often. The 439, which is this one here, is the one we're now using. And we have shot wells Well, the last well we shot was down in the Gulf of Mexico, and the well was not producing anything. They tried three different conventional fractures, spent over $2 million, and we fractured for $80,000, and it went to 20 million cubic feet of gas a day. So it's a significant, fairly significant increase in production. Well, we don't have a video here. I'm trying to get through this thing a little faster than normally. This thing takes like an hour, so I'm kind of shortcutting, which is probably not as understandable. Here's a test where we did a on whether we can fracture, and here's another one. These are some of the test rigs we had. Another one had this in here, you know, supported between blocks. Here's some pressure modeling we've done for area propellant burning and propellant burn rate. Here's a typical configuration. This down here is in lower proportion of gun is down here. It comes up, and then they have holes that actually go out in all directions, so you get a better communication with the wellbore fluid that's around it. We have, well, these are some of the summaries here. The thing, I wish I had the other thumb drive, because it shows you some of the nice results. But the well we did in the North Sea was the first well that Norway had offshore. They spent about $1.5 million trying to make it complete, and it wouldn't complete. So they had us shoot a, I guess it was 20 feet of the Arkite 386, and the next day it went from, well, it was doing like a minimum of 30 or 40 barrels a day. It went to 2,000 barrels a day, which made them pretty happy. And after that, we don't get a phone call, but I get actually not from Schlumberger, but I get a phone call from the just prescient president, senior vice president, who quit because Schlumberger canceled us. Because if you look at the economics, it's just as wrong for a completion company, is that the completing of the well is about 20% of what the cost is. I'm sorry, the digging of the well. And then the completion of the well, which is what Schlumberger does, is about 70 or 80%. And then the rest of it is basically the oil thing. A normal completion of a well would take 20 guys, 3 days, with about $3 million worth of equipment out at the well site. And using our process, two guys in a wireline truck can do 3 wells a day. So you can see that they all of a sudden lose money, and that's why we're not in business any longer. And we were told, you know, if you want to sue us, you can, but you better plan on living to be over 120, because that's how long it's going to take to get to court. So sometimes you get these things that happen in science that you might think is great, but sometimes it cuts into people's paycheck, and they're very unhappy with that. Okay, anybody have any questions? Yeah.
What's the characteristics of the ultimate fracture compared to conventional, which tend to be a vertical
plane? We've done both verticals and horizontal.
Well, just can you use vertical as an example, or is
that's what I'm going to do. But we've done both vertical and horizontal. Normally, you have a wellbore and a fracture, and when they perforate it, it goes out, and the fractures that are off the perforations align themselves are parallel to the maximum stress plane, because they're overcoming the minimum. So you get a well bore here, and you get fractures that come off all sides, but they immediately turn and go along the maximum fracture direction. Ours actually allows us to fracture, and we actually open the fracture up, and as the fracture goes out in the burn, we actually get fractures that are perpendicular, go out perpendicular to it. So rather than having a real long ellipse of oil formation giving you product, it's a much wider ellipse. And the average is 3 to 3.5 times better production.
How far out is your
estimate? We don't know.
From the casing?
They won't let us go down and mine their well after they drill it.
No. I mean your modeling and your expectations.
Oh, I just have the total fracture length perpendicular. I don't know how it looks. I know what the total length is. Okay, we did a well up in North Dakota, which is kind of interesting. It was 6,600 feet. We put down 40 feet of propellant and we fractured it. And it was doing 2 barrels a day before we fractured it, post shot 127, which made them pretty happy. You know, they're getting some product now. I have a friend that was, he's not here any longer, but he used to be in the Earthquake Institute across. I went to ask him, I said, what kind of, did you see anything up around this area in Williston on this date? He said, yeah, we saw this earthquake, but it's not an earthquake that looks normal because normally earthquakes die off as 1 over R. This died off as 1 over R squared because it's going out radially. And he said it was a 6.8 Richter scale event. And the people up in North Dakota had never felt an earthquake before, so the oil guys were really upset until it quit. But it was kind of fun. Anybody else have any questions? Yeah.
Rich mentioned the environmental advantage of this.
Well, yeah, the environmental advantage, you're not putting a bunch of gassy stuff down the wells. You know, you're just going down and you're producing gas, which comes from a propellant, which is like what I passed around. And propellant gas is from rocket. Propellant is pretty benign to humans. And then there's a little bit of CO, but not much. And it's a process which is very kind to the environment. You know, you don't have all the stuff. In fact, when we first started, we had the EPA come out and examine what we were doing. And they came about 10 o'clock and they asked us some questions. At 10:20, they left. Never heard from them again. So it's kind of, I guess they're satisfied from the EPA. Yes?
So there's no water here, right? Is that another?
Sometimes we shoot water down hole, sometimes we shoot dry. Uh-huh. If you put water down hole, you got a better chance. But you've got to look at how strong the casing is. Some of the casing we've shot has been as much as 30, 40 years old. So we try to back off on the total pressure because if you destroy the well, they're not going to be very happy with you.
What's the longevity of the fracture? How often do you have to refracture?
The refracturing in the lifetime of these treatments is about 3 to 3.5 times longer than conventional hydraulic fracturing. So it's better, it's 3 times better, and it lasts 3 times as long.
Question?
Yeah.
So, Colorado, you know, there's a lot of wells that were initially drilled from vertical wells.
Yeah.
Vertical drilling around here. I notice the oil companies are keeping their
pardon?
Oil companies are keeping the wells in place, even though houses are being built around them. The suspicion is that horizontal drilling will be used on those same drilling rigs.
Okay, that's the case. I got to
hold on. I know that, but what my question is, if you're using propellants and you're doing horizontal drilling under residential areas like my house, by the way. What happens at the surface when these things go up?
If somebody's home when we shoot it, they might feel a slight vibration, if that's it. But up in Boulder, we shot a well that was in a housing project. I mean, these are like side lots. A little nervous in here, but it was. We made sure that everybody surrounding the area was off to work or not there at that point we shot, so we had to wait a couple days to get the right population to zero. And nobody even made a comment or made a report that we had caused their pictures on the wall or out.
Do you expect some sort of standards to come up saying how much vibration
no,
can we cause at the surface?
I mean, when you feel it, it's just a thump. It's
I'm not sure how it, I imagine you look at the cartoon with the bear's hip, the foot makes a thump. It's kind of like a thump like that, you know.
But then the last one is, I know the thump would vary with the depth, right?
Yeah.
Do you expect some sort of standards coming out saying that it needs a certain depth when it's under residential areas?
Well, we have a shot in less than 6,000 feet in the residential area. But other than that, you know, the shallowest well we shot was like 3,500 feet. You know, we don't want to get too close to the top. Because, before we got things figured out, the tubing that we had coming down, we pushed the second well we shot, the conveyor tube, we pushed it out of the hole 250 feet, which was a little concerning. We were trying to fracture a well, not launch a missile. It's kind of fun. You know, you feel like you've done something that's outstanding. Yeah. Yeah.
What keeps these things from your fracture? Why doesn't gravity just close them back up again? What keeps these fractures?
They self-prop.
They what?
They self-prop.
Oh, you mean little particles?
Yeah, well, the as far as we can tell, when you fracture through a hard formation, which is a lot of rock, we get rocks that are about 1 inch in diameter, they're very ragged, and so it's going to be able to transmit fluid in. So, I mean, it wasn't something we planned on. It's something we fortunately stumbled into. And we don't put any problem on the hole ever. In fact, I think that's kind of a bad idea to begin with, because if you put something down the hole, you're plugging up what you've already done. Anybody else?
All right, let's thank Richard.